From Feature Story News in Washington and our bureaus around the world, this is FSN Reports. I'm Kevin McAleese. On today's programme, the name of the officer who shot and killed 18-year-old Michael Brown last weekend in Ferguson, Missouri, is named, as surveillance footage allegedly showing the victim assaulting the owner of a convenience store is also released.
Well, we needed to release that. At the same time, we would release the name of the officer who was involved in the shooting so that we could just keep open and give you all the information that we have.
Also today, the World Health Organization admits the Ebola crisis in West Africa has been vastly underestimated, and our correspondent has all the latest from the growing tensions at the Russia-Ukrainian border.
Claims from Kiev that a Russian military convoy had been engaged inside Ukrainian territory, and a lot of those vehicles, if not all of them, were destroyed.
That's coming up on FSN Reports after our latest summary of the day's headlines.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Rebecca Foster. The European Union has said it supports France's decision to supply arms to Kurdish forces fighting Islamic State jihadists in northern Iraq. But EU foreign ministers in Brussels stopped short of agreeing to send a joint mission during talks which also discussed a worsening crisis in Ukraine and Libya. Europe correspondent Sandra Gatman reports.
EU foreign ministers stopped short of agreeing on a plan of action for Iraq, but have said they will support member states like France deciding to send arms to Kurdish forces fighting the advances of Islamic State militants. On Friday, Britain repeated its readiness to follow suit, as has Italy, though German Foreign Minister Frank-Walter Steinmeier is first set to travel to Iraq to assess the needs of Kurdish fighters. EU diplomats also said they will support the creation of a new, more inclusive government in Iraq following the resignation of former Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki.
As deaths linked to the Ebola virus continue to rise, the World Health Organization has warned that the magnitude of the crisis has been vastly underestimated. According to their latest figures, over 1,000 people have died as a result of the outbreak. William Denzelow reports from UN headquarters in New York.
The Ebola epidemic began in February. The World Health Organization warned they expect the threat to continue for some time. In a statement from the United Nations agency, they said staff at the outbreak sites see evidence that the numbers of reported cases and deaths vastly underestimate the magnitude of the outbreak. Close to 2,000 people have been infected with the virus across Nigeria, Guinea, Liberia and Sierra Leone, with concerns it could spread further afield. Receiving dozens of flights from these nations every week, the World Health Organization say Kenya is a particular area of concern.
Police in the U.S. state of Missouri have released the name of the officer who shot and killed an unarmed black teenager. 18-year-old Michael Brown was shot multiple times, prompting days of protests and unrest. U.S. correspondent Daniel Wrenches reports.
Police in the St. Louis suburb of Ferguson have faced mounting pressure to release the name of the officer responsible for the shooting. Now Chief Thomas Jackson has chosen to do so.
Darren Wilson, he's been a police officer for 6 years.
Police have also suggested that 18-year-old Michael Brown had been stopped by the officer because he was perceived to match a description of a person involved in a violent robbery moments earlier. Days of unrest have dissipated after the state's governor stepped in and took away the local police's responsibility for handling protest sites where they faced nationwide criticism for heavy-handed tactics.
From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN. Moscow has denied reports that its military vehicles enter the territory of Ukraine Friday morning. The Kremlin denounced a statement by the Ukrainian president, saying the Ukrainian army had destroyed a part of the convoy. But NATO officials say they saw a Russian incursion into Ukraine. Darya Bondarchuk reports from Moscow.
The Ukrainian army's spokesman Andriy Lysenko told journalists at a news briefing on Friday that the government forces picked up a Russian military column crossing the country's border overnight. A significant part of it was eliminated, Ukrainian President Petro Poroshenko later told British Prime Minister David Cameron. Britain summoned Russian envoy for explanations. Russian Foreign Ministry called Ukraine's statements some kind of fantasy, denying that any Russian military units had entered Ukraine. NATO's Secretary General Anders Fogh Rasmussen stated the alliance had seen what he called a Russian incursion into Ukraine. Daria Bondarchuk, Moscow.
And U.S. President Barack Obama is expected to cut short his holiday and return to Washington on Sunday amid the deepening crisis in Iraq and escalating tension between Ukraine and Russia. The White House says his meetings were pre-scheduled but conceded Iraq will be topping the agenda since the U.S. launched airstrikes last week. Nina Maria Potts reports from Washington.
White House aides have not been forthcoming over why the president is cutting short his holiday at Martha's Vineyard to fly back to Washington. He has scheduled meetings with Vice President Joe Biden on Sunday, but a White House spokesman did say he wouldn't be surprised if the president held conversations on Iraq. But his aides have also been playing down expectations of any major announcements. Still, the decision to interrupt the president's holiday is seen as very unusual. Though with conflicts in Iraq, Syria, Ukraine and Gaza, there's a lot for the president to focus on back here in Washington.
And that's the latest from Feature Story News. Rebecca Foster reporting.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Kevin McAleese. Welcome to FSN Reports. Police in Ferguson, Missouri have made public the name of the officer who shot and killed 18-year-old Michael Brown last weekend in the St. Louis suburb. At the same time, authorities also released surveillance footage allegedly showing the victim assaulting the owner of a convenience store before the shooting took place. Ferguson Chief of Police Thomas Jackson had this to say earlier.
At some point, it was just determined that we had to release it. We didn't have good cause, absent any other reason to not release it under FOI, so and decided at the same time it wouldn't be prudent to release that information, which, you know, could be a little bit. Well, we needed to release that at the same time we would release the name of the officer who was involved in the shooting, so that we could just keep open and give you all the information that we have.
Darren Wilson, the officer responsible, was described as a 6-year veteran of the police force with no prior disciplinary issues. Bill Rack is the news editor at St. Louis Public Radio.
The biggest news to come out of today is that the police chief of Ferguson this morning released the name of the officer who was involved in the shooting of Michael Brown. His name is Darren Wilson. He's been a police officer with the Ferguson Police Department for about 6 years. He's a white police officer, 28 years old. And that news was released this morning at a press conference in Ferguson. At that same press conference, the police also released information related to a convenience store robbery that had occurred shortly before the Michael Brown death. And they believe that they believe. Based on the information they put out today, that Michael Brown was involved in that robbery and that the reason he was stopped by police was because he was a suspect in that robbery.
Obviously, we've had reports concerning the identity of the police officer involved and, as you've just said, that footage from that convenience store. But do we have any more detail concerning, say, an autopsy in this situation?
No, we don't. In fact, the family of Michael Brown has requested a second autopsy be done. Initially, they were discussing the possibility of having the funeral for Michael Brown tomorrow, but now the family has asked for a second autopsy, and so that's going to delay the funeral until next week at some point. So we don't have any information about the autopsy at this juncture.
And since Michael Brown was shot on Saturday, we've seen protests grow into more violent scenes, but last night things were slightly different in that area.
That's correct. We had several reporters in Ferguson last night, and they all reported the same thing, and that is that the police presence wasn't nearly as heavy-handed. There were officers in shirt sleeves walking alongside protesters, offering them water, talking with them, chatting with them, allowing them to peacefully protest on the sidewalks. There was a steady parade of vehicles up and down the main thoroughfare in Ferguson last night, cars honking, people honking their horns, holding up signs, reaching out of windows, waving. It was all very peaceful, and there were no reports of any arrests last night. The governor recently concluded a news conference with the head of the Missouri Highway Patrol, Captain Ron Johnson, and they both reported that there were no arrests last night, and that the attitude was completely different And that may be the result of the fact that there weren't any armored vehicles being parked in streets. There weren't officers with guns pointed at the protesters. They allowed basically the people of Ferguson and the people who wanted to be there to peacefully protest last night. And it was a big difference.
Yes, because there was a great deal of criticism for that sort of militarized police presence, wasn't there?
There really was. And a lot of the people in Ferguson said that that may have incited some of the problems instead of trying to protect the problems from occurring. That came about after the Sunday night looting and damage to stores and businesses. The very next night, Monday night, is when we started seeing the militarization, as you say. And the people in Ferguson basically said once that started, that kind of made the feelings rise even farther, and the hostilities were growing more and more until last night.
And lastly, Bill, do we have any idea if there are more protests planned in Ferguson over the weekend?
We know of a couple, and they all are still scheduled as far as we know. There's a big march that's going to take place over the weekend. Reverend Al Sharpton is going to be returning to St. Louis. He was here earlier in the week for a press conference and a church service. On Sunday, he's going to be back for a march through Ferguson along with Michael Brown's parents and their attorney, and they're going to be leading a march through Ferguson from a local church to the place where Michael was shot. And so we know that's going to be a big event on Sunday, but there are also other events planned throughout the weekend.
Bill Rack with St. Louis Public Radio. This is FSN Reports. Ukraine officials say its country's military has attacked a Russian armoured column on Ukraine's side of the border. A spokesperson for the Ukrainian forces said the units had crossed the border during the night and were partially destroyed. Moscow denies the presence of its military on Ukrainian territory. Echoing an earlier warning from the US, the EU issued a statement saying that any unilateral action by Russia's military in Ukraine would be a clear violation of international law. Meanwhile, a Russian aid convoy of some 300 trucks has come to a standstill, while Kiev and Moscow remain deadlocked. The convoy carrying humanitarian aid was headed for eastern Ukraine, but was denied permission to cross the border by Kiev. FSN's Tom Barton was shown inside some of the trucks involved.
The convoy of hundreds of trucks left the Russian city of Voronezh from its airbase there early in the morning, heading hundreds of kilometres down the eastern side of the Ukrainian border, remaining in Russia and arriving in the Rostov region, close to the Russian border, opposite the areas of eastern Ukraine, where pro-Russian militants are fighting against Ukrainian government forces. Inside, the Russian government maintains humanitarian aid. And today, for one of the first times, the trucks were opened and journalists were able to look inside. Inside some of them, some buckwheat for the consumption of those civilians in that region of eastern Ukraine. Also found some sleeping bags as well. No weapons, as has been suspected by some in Ukraine and in the international community, though only a small part of the convoy was allowed to be seen by journalists. Officials travelling with the convoy and crew are also very cagey, not telling journalists where the convoy is heading or who, for example, are those manning the convoy, whether they are perhaps ex-military or still perhaps serving military. Some military tattoos from the Russian armed forces were seen on the arms of some of those with the convoy. And arguments still continue between the Ukrainian and Russian side about whether the convoy should be allowed in. The Ukrainians reportedly having refused to let it in across one of their border control checkpoints because it had failed to meet conditions that they had set. They blamed Russia for that, and Russia then blamed Ukraine as well. And now the prospect is that the convoy will cross at a part of the border that is controlled by pro-Russian rebels, which would break a condition that Kiev set, that the Ukrainian that this convoy is only allowed into their territory under their terms and with their agreement, otherwise it would be considered an invasion. The suspicion has not gone away around the convoy, neither has the feeling of propaganda being used by both sides, Ukraine having organised its own humanitarian convoy as well to travel to the region. And the feeling that perhaps Moscow is trying to use this convoy, if for nothing else, than to try and make the Ukrainian government look cruel, while there is a desperate situation for civilians, especially in the cities of Luhansk and Donetsk in the east of Ukraine.
FSN's Russia correspondent Tom Barton. Now, the European Union has said it supports France's decision to supply arms to Kurdish forces fighting Islamic State jihadists in northern Iraq and has deplored a growing humanitarian crisis in the country. But EU foreign ministers in Brussels stopped short of agreeing to send a joint mission during talks which also discussed the worsening crisis in Ukraine. Our correspondent Sandra Gatman reports.
An escalation of fighting in Iraq and Ukraine prompted this rare emergency meeting of EU foreign ministers in Brussels. The European countries present deplored the atrocities carried out by Sunni militants in Iraq. But so far, only France has answered calls from the northern Kurdish region for better weapons to fight jihadist advances. Britain, Italy, and the Czech Republic say they're prepared to follow suit, while Germany's foreign minister, Frank-Walter Steinmeier, will be in Iraq to assess the needs of Kurdish fighters first. U.S. military airstrikes, Kurdish officials say, have helped. But a growing humanitarian crisis surrounding more than 1.2 million refugees in the region remains another concern. Germany is now the latest country after France, the UK, and the US airlifting aid to those fleeing the violence. Meanwhile, a new dawn in Iraqi politics following Thursday's resignation of Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki is being hailed by EU diplomats as a chance to form an inclusive government that could help drive a solution. The EU's foreign policy chief, Catherine Ashton.
A number of colleagues, and I include myself in that, paid tribute to former Prime Minister Maliki for the way in which, in a very statesmanlike way, he decided to move away from his position and to enable a prime minister designate to be put forward.
The EU also remains concerned about tension on the Ukrainian border with Russia. Given the fresh presence of a Russian military convoy, Moscow says is designed for aid delivery. Diplomats hinted the possibility of further sanctions should Russia make any military advance into Ukraine. The UK's Foreign Secretary, Philip Hammond.
I'm very alarmed by reports that Russian military vehicles may have crossed the border this morning. Of course, the humanitarian convoy itself is a separate issue. But if there are any Russian military personnel or vehicles in eastern Ukraine, they need to be withdrawn immediately, or the consequences could be very serious.
The European Union remains extremely watchful as tensions continue to escalate in both Ukraine and across the Middle East. The question is how far these crises will be allowed to worsen before tougher action is agreed. Sandra Gatman, Brussels.
This is FSN Reports. An international medical relief group has warned it could take 6 months to bring West Africa's Ebola outbreak under control. Doctors Without Borders say the situation has escalated far quicker than expected. The group says controlling the outbreak, which has now killed over 1,000 people, will require greater leadership from the World Health Organization. Gary Alfonso is our Africa correspondent.
This is the first time the World Health Organization has come out with a definitive statement that the scale of the Ebola outbreak could have been vastly underestimated. This is a very serious sign about what the World Health Organization now understands might be the situation on the ground versus the situation that they've been given from organizations that are trying to deal with this health epidemic in at least four countries in Western Africa. And they know that this disease has started in Guinea in February and spread to Liberia, Sierra Leone, and now also in Nigeria, and have killed 1,069 people officially, as far as they can tell. But what they are now saying is that there might be cases from rural parts of those three countries and even neighboring countries that might not have been reported yet. And that's why they're saying that this could be one of the most serious health situations that is now facing the globe because of the instant travel and the way people can cross borders, not only from West Africa, but into neighboring continents. And as seriously, the world's health system weighs very seriously on finding a solution for this, because it is not just West Africa's problem. The World Health Organization says it is now the world's problem, and a very serious case of dealing with it needs to be put forward to all countries around the world in having a response to every single Ebola case that might be reported in their territories.
The president of Doctors Without Borders says it could take as much as 6 months to get this situation under control. And to quote her, if we don't stabilize Liberia, we will never stabilize the region. We already know that Liberia has taken delivery of an untested Ebola drug. Do we know if it's being administered to any patients yet?
Well, Liberia is obviously one of the territories where this disease has had the greatest impact, and more than 300 people alone having died in only Liberia, which borders Guinea, where the disease broke out, and then also to a lesser extent Sierra Leone. But it's also in the neighboring countries of Cote d'Ivoire, where there seems to be serious panic, not only in rural areas that border the country of Sierra Leone, but or Liberia. There is a serious concern around air traffic and passengers moving between those areas from small strips, airstrips, but also through borders where regional and rural burials are taking place. So the message that Médecins Sans Frontières is trying to get across, not only to the health authorities in West Africa, but also to the world, is that unless the actual extent of the problem is identified in West Africa, where there's still a massive or massively underreported situation as far as Ebola is concerned in rural areas, the world has perhaps not even seen the beginnings of what the total death toll is right now, because the authorities, not only in Liberia and also in other parts of Sierra Leone and also Guinea, are reporting new cases of deaths having occurred as far as a year back, been reported from very rural locations where people have buried family members and have simply moved on with their lives. And in some cases, those diseases ascribed to things like cholera, typhoid, or even malaria. So the symptoms very similar, and it's been quite confusing for health authorities to deal with those problems in those areas. As far as the medical treatment of people, there really has been only enough medication sent for three patients, and that has obviously since dried up, and or it's been administered, but not even remotely enough to try and deal with the real issue on the ground. We hear from people that have reported from cities like Monrovia that people that might have collapsed due to the symptoms of Ebola are simply lying on pavements, and people are not going close to them and walking wide circles around them. So this, the extent of this disease is way underestimated at the moment, and that's perhaps the message that Médecins Sans Frontières is saying, that a completely universal approach is now needed, and not just isolated cases of drugs that could help with this. A global pharmaceutical, I think perhaps what they're suggesting is that a global pharmaceutical drive is needed to get medicines to those areas cheaply and very fast.
And Gary, you're now in Nigeria, where four people have died from the Ebola virus. What measures is the country taking to avoid the fate of those other African nations worse affected?
Yes, Nigerian authorities are taking this very seriously. There was a case in Lagos where one woman, a nurse, who left the quarantine hospital where she was isolated, booked herself out of the hospital and took a bus trip hundreds of kilometers away to her home village, because she felt fine, has been brought back by the authorities and quarantined. And obviously the 30 or so people that she could have been in contact with are all being sought and isolated as we speak. The Lagos authorities are really very vigilant in trying to deal with this. Scanners at the airport, the immigration officials wearing gloves and even masks over their faces or over their mouths, even though it's not an airborne disease. They're taking it very seriously, and the airport has also stopped the landing of all flights from Sierra Leone, Liberia, and also Guinea. So flights cannot get in from those areas, and it creates more problems for people who are trying to do business in West Africa. Here in Nigeria, there's a very concerted effort to try and stay away from those kinds of areas as far as business is concerned, and it is actually having quite a serious impact on the business and economies of these areas.
Gary Alfonso in Nigeria. And staying on the African continent, the United Nations Security Council has made an historic visit to Somalia. It was a show of international support for a country which, after years of civil war, has started to make political progress. But the security situation is still extremely precarious, and the secure zones are heavily fortified. Nick Harper reports from Somalia's capital, Mogadishu.
When dignitaries visit Mogadishu, they roll out the red carpet and the barbed wire. This is where the African Union mission to Somalia, or AMISOM, is based, housed within a fortress of sandbags, checkpoints and guns. It's been 20 years since the council was last on Somali soil. In that time, it's seen many changes. Civil war has ended and the country has formed its first government for two decades. The UK, as the lead member for Somalia, was keen for the council to make the trip. At the end of last year, they reopened their embassy here, a moment that UK Ambassador Mark Lyle Grant thinks marks a turning point.
It is a good news story. There is some real progress being made. Yes, there are major challenges, but those challenges can be overcome with the international community's support. And we thought it was important to come here, be seen to come here, and show support. Because this country has a real chance of breaking out of a desperate 20 years.
Even areas inside the compound show the signs of years of fighting. Bombed-out buildings house AMISOM troops. They're preparing for a second offensive against the Islamist group Al-Shabaab to push them out of more towns and villages that have been under the insurgents' control for many years. The Security Council likes to hold Somalia up as an example of a country that has seen great changes. AMISOM and the UN mission here have made good inroads, helping to train and reform the country's army and police force, and helping the country to prepare for the elections in 2016. But the security situation is still volatile, perhaps clearly shown in the council's decision to hold all its meetings within the AMISOM compound, not venturing too far into Mogadishu. While here, the Security Council met with Somalia's president, Hassan Sheikh Mohamed. Afterwards, Nigeria's deputy representative, Ambassador Usman Saki, said they'd been encouraged by what they'd heard.
Members of the Security Council received a firm assurance and commitment to work towards national unity, to strengthen state institutions, to respect human rights and civil liberties, to restore Somalia to its past dignity.
The UN is heavily invested in the country, and it's determined not to see it fail. Here's Ambassador Grant.
The Security Council will continue to follow developments in Somalia very closely. We will continue to support and encourage and sometimes question the federal government and other authorities in their search for a better future for the Somali people.
But the humanitarian challenges are daunting. 2 million people have been forced from their homes, and the same number are facing starvation. There are difficult months ahead for Somalia. The UN warns the country stands at a crossroads, and taking a wrong turn now could undermine the last few years of progress. Nick Harper, Mogadishu.
And that's the Friday edition of FSN Reports. If you'd like to contact the show, you can email us reports@featurestory.com, and you can follow us on Twitter. We're there @featurestory. But for now, I'm Kevin McAleese in Washington with Rebecca Foster on the bulletin desk. For everyone with FSN everywhere, have a great weekend. Goodbye.